To Want a Boy, Chapter 8. It was almost an hour before I heard a light tapping on my door. I'd been jerking around, pacing so frantically I'd almost missed hearing it when it finally came. I took two giant steps to the door and opened it, and there he was, a sly smile curling up one side of his face. "He was a bit difficult to get rid of," he confided. I gathered he would be. "Come in." I motioned him in and closed the door. He walked to the center of the room, looked around casually, and then turned to face me. "I'm not much for picking up strangers," he apologized. "However, I got the impression that you are very new to this. Am I correct?" I shrugged and finally nodded. It kind of embarrassed me. "I think that was the first thing that attracted you to me. I kept watching you in the mirror at the bar, and you never would look up. Just sat there like a hungry boy, afraid to touch the pie or reach for it." "Was I right?"
"Not exactly," I told him. "I really was more curious than anything else. I was in another bar and heard them talking about this place, and I wanted to know how they could tell a gay person." I found it easier to say gay now that I discovered the word. "It was this very evening, rather than the only two words I knew, queer and homo."
"And could you?" he asked, smiling. "Not most of them. Carl was a little, you know." I threw up my hands. "Swishy?" he asked. "That's good enough," I answered. "You know, effeminacy. Carl's a good boy, though. He's a fine artist, and he values my friendship enough to keep his mouth shut, I think."
I laughed at that. "You tack that I think on sort of hesitantly," I opinioned.
"Well, he's been acting more and more jealous and suspicious lately. Sometimes I think his friendship is going to strangle me. You know what I mean?"
"May I ask you something rather personal?" I hesitated as I says it.
"Perhaps," he grinned. "Try me."
"He's so effeminate, and you're his friend. How come you were attracted to me?"
Evan sat down on the couch with a whoosh, smiling broadly. "You really are new at this, aren't you?"
"Not that new." I looked into his eyes. "Come here," he commanded, and like a docile Saint Bernard, I obeyed. He patted the cushion beside him, and I sat down. He reached over and quickly unzipped my fly, expertly slipped through my shorts, and flicked out my peter. It began almost instantly to grow. He sat there, silently staring at it, watching it grow in his hand, grow and harden and jerk in little spasms of need. I sat there mutely, watching with him.
"That is the most beautiful prick I ever saw," he said matter-of-factly. "You don't ever have to worry about anyone wanting you to be a pansy. You could turn a bull into a cow."
I said nothing. Suddenly I could hear Bob telling me he wouldn't be around, but didn't want to lose track of my big stick.
So piss on him.
"Turn on the TV, Evan suggested.
I was pretty damned hot to sit and watch TV, but I shrugged and leaned over to click it on. Then I got up and went over the door and turned the light off. I felt kind of silly walking around waving my flag, but I sat back down and his soft, manicured fingers again reached for him. I put an arm around him and then reached over and unzipped his fly with my other hand. I could not enter his shorts as nimbly as he did mine, but when I finally got through, I grasped his peter with my fingers and then worked on down to cup his balls in my hand. He spread his legs and sighed. Then I pulled his meat through the opening in his shorts and looked at it, quivering, the hole pulsing. This was even more sensuous than standing in front of a mirror, the display of wantonness. We continued to watch the old movie on TV.
"Have you ever tried it this way before?" he asked.
"No," I answered huskily. "It's erotic as hell."
"I think so," he answered, his eyes still glued to the screen.
"This is the way it first happened to me. I went to a Saturday matinee at the local theater. A man came in and sat next to me. I must have been 13. He started by resting his hand on my knee. If he'd been old and ugly, I probably would have sucked him, but he was an athletic, big guy, a lot like you, and his hand fascinated me. I was curious just how far it would go at first. By the time he worked up to my crotch and cradled my genital in his hands, I was on fire. He unzipped my fly and slipped through and pulled out my peter. It wasn't very big, but it was cocked like a flagpole. I looked down and saw myself exposed and jerked my jacket over onto my lap so fast you wouldn't believe it, but I never moved his hand. Later, I couldn't stand it. I just had to feel him, so I edged my hand over, and when I felt the size of his rod, I thought I'd die right there. I don't think it was as big as yours. I've never seen one that big before, but I was just a kid then, and it sure looked big to me.
He brought his trench coat over his lap, too, and then gave me the courage to go fishing for his rod. It was so hot in my hand, I'll never forget the fire it lit in me. I've never wanted a woman since. I had to move his hand away to let me cool. He looked up, surprised, and then smiled. And do you know what he did to me after we sat there and fondled each other for a while? No, what? I asked, and my own pulse was pounding so loud I could barely stand it as I listened to his erotic tale and felt his deft, feathery fingers. He let me sit on his lap, he grinned. Right there in the theater? I choked. I got up and gave an old lady my seat, he laughed. And nobody noticed anything? I was already reaching for him now. No, keeping her body from thrashing around made it last twice as long, and getting away with it made the whole thing twice as erotic. He stood up and slowly moved on to my lap, impaling himself gently as he moved down. Down, against my loins. When he was sitting completely impaled, I stretched, stiffening my body out straight. Then I encircled his pelvis with one arm over the other hand that cupped his genitals, and I pulled him tight against me. He groaned, and I ground it into him, deep and sensuously. Oh, God. Oh, shit. Oh, go. Go, he moaned as I pulled back and ground against him again. I spread my legs and brought my heels up on the edge of the couch, groaning at the closeness of our connection. He began a low, keening wail as he bent forward, clinging to my knees as he went. Then he spread his legs and wrapped them around mine. Slowly, calculatingly, I began rocking back and forth, and my prick plunged and stripped with our serpentine movements. We were clamped in the tightest genital embrace I had ever experienced, and the muscles of his rectum gripped the very base of my cock. Then we would draw away until his shuddering membranes barely clung to the tip of my head. Then down again, plunging wildly, wantonly, as we savored every quivering sensation. He kept his bowels flexing, hugging all the time I worked, and soon I could not maintain the slow, dallying movements any longer. Now I became urgent, kneading his organ with frenzied fingers, and I slammed against his body over and over and over again, the cadence quickening with every plunge. My heels jerked away from the grip on the sofa, and I slammed on the floor. I moved with them until my rump was free on the sofa entirely, and I could slap faster and harder at him as he rode the bucking bronco that was my body. And then a frenzied fit of release was on us, and he pushed down against me wildly as I ground my rod into him for one long, last, tantalizing spasm, and I spurted my fertility into his bowels, and he gave up his flow into my quivering hand. It was a consummation long to be remembered. And when it was over, and we had gotten our wind back, he climbed sedately out of the saddle and headed for the can. "I'm afraid, Bert," he said as he reached the bathroom door, "that I'm going to have seconds on that." And we smiled. I limped to my feet. "That's fine with me, but we'll have to do it in bed. I'm too old for that kind of gymnastics." I held my back as I limped to the shower. But I didn't get to bed. Not for a while. We climbed in the shower and leisurely scrubbed each other. Before long, we were all cocked and panting again. "Take me in here," he pleaded. "God, no, it'll kill us both. Try, Bert. Try." And his lips came up as he pulled my head down to meet him. I kissed him long and open-mouthed, grinding against him, stabbing with my tongue as I felt him surrender completely against me. Then slowly he slithered out of my arms. Hugging arms were around my thighs and his mouth hungrily sucking on the head of my tool. Again, as I had with Bob, I spread my legs wide like some god spanning the oceans, and he pulled my bag to him and caressed his neck with the meat of my flesh. I felt no shame. Perhaps I am too much a realist, but the lustful rapture that now pulsed throughout my being had been dammed up, denied too many years. For too long, I had been only half a man, belittled by woman, depreciated in my own eyes. Now, as I stood there allowing this man to worship at the altar of manhood, I was proud. I was a man. One hell of a man. And I had the biggest goddamn prick in the world, and I was proud of it. Piss on Bob. Piss on the world. And I spurted my seed into his mouth in a searing frenzy. And all these erotic passion thoughts now left me, and I wanted to give to this man as he had given to me, and I lifted him high above me. He wrapped his legs around my neck, and as I pinned him against the sweating tile wall of the shower, I buried my head deep in the heat between his thighs and ate greedily. I was blind with hunger for him, and my hands worked his sack and his round cheeks, kneading the flesh, bruising the flesh with my passion. He writhed serpentine above me, slithering from side to side, moaning low, almost whispering with the intoxicating thrill of ecstasy as I stripped his phallus faster and faster in a frenzy of thrusts. My tongue pulsed, beating a tattoo against the quivering seat of lust at the base of its head. And suddenly, without warning, the organ jerked involuntarily in my mouth once, and then the hot, sweet fluid spewed in, and my chest filled with the elation of having conquered. And while I conquered, I gave pleasure, and this, I think, is really the greatest thrill of all. You'd have to live with a cold, frigid woman half your life to know just what I feel at bringing sexual pleasure to another human. I stood there quivering with the satisfaction it gave me for almost a full minute before I released him and lowered him down. Phew, was all he could muster as he finally remembered to turn off the water. I may never be the same again, I groaned, rubbing my trucker's back. I'm sorry, Bert. I had no intention of... He started, but I waved my arm, telling him to forget it. Those things happen. I understand, but let's get dressed and go down to the bar where we can talk without distraction. He laughed and nodded in agreement. We both dressed and took the elevator down to the hotel bar. All the way down, I kept trying to figure out how I could make my runs to New York regular. This would be such a great deal. It was a lot farther and more monotonous, but to have found someone with the same needs, it was great. I was building sandcastles and the tide was coming in. We found a small booth off in a corner. I have a feeling I'm about to be given the third degree, Evan snickered as he got comfortable. That's about it, I agreed. I've got so many questions. This world just isn't at all what I pictured when I was straight, he finished for me. I shrugged. Yeah, I guess so. You expected exaggerated female characteristics, where men wear globs of makeup and swish their hips as they walk. He was stating a fact, not asking a question. Yeah, something like that. I was helpless to explain just what I really meant. They're a minority, frankly, Bert, and we'd all be better off if they didn't exist. How do you mean? Well, they're what people hate. The overly effeminacy, the exaggerated, the grotesque. I'll tell you, he suddenly exclaimed. Would you like to see for yourself? Yes, I leaned forward, intense with anticipation. All right, let's see. It's going to be a rough putting Carl off for the next two nights in a row. He pondered. Why? I asked. What strings does he have on you? He looked me straight in the eye. We're married, Bert. What? I recoiled. We're married, just like a man and a woman, except that there can be no legal ceremony. Then he leaned toward me, peering at me in earnest. Bert, I'm not normally passive. Your brute size and that fantastic rod of yours intrigue me, but as a rule, I prefer to play the part of the male. Carl is passive all the way. I find it easier to play this married game than to have to go looking for it night after night. When I stray, and I'm afraid it's fairly often, it hurts Carl terribly. And I really don't enjoy hurting him. Then why do you do it? I hurt deep in my gut as I asked it. He upped his palms and shrugged. I don't know, Bert. There are just so many available. We all do it. The aggressive ones, I mean. We know our mate would never leave us, no matter how unfaithful we are, because we're a breed too hard to find. Oh, hell, I can't explain it. Let's talk tomorrow. No, at this hour, I guess it would be tonight. I don't want to hurt anybody, I objected. One more night won't kill him. I'll take you to Greenwich Village and show you the sights. It's really something you ought to see, Bert, he argued. I'd like to see it, Evan, I admitted. Hey, I got an idea. When I come in to buy the suit, why don't you suggest it and invite Carl? If we're just going sightseeing, it won't hurt anything. Well, I'd sort of hope to sample that. Oh, well, if you want. He seemed disappointed. So did I, Evan. I would have liked to make a New York a regular thing, but I don't want to break up anything, I told him. He smiled deeply and took my hand. If I wasn't such a greedy son of a bitch, I'd damn near so passive, permanent, a steady piece of that. But once or twice a month, I'd starve to death, he conceded. I smiled, but shook my head. In surprise? Disgust? God keep me from becoming that greedy, I thought. I would hate to go around making someone miserably unhappy and not even be bothered by it.